The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.
Hello and welcome to the North Sound Energy Week podcast. I'm Finlay Duncan. This week, the need to prepare for decommissioning in the North Sea is highlighted. Recommendations for an oil fund if Scotland was to vote for independence next year. And Holyrood's energy minister meets an oil and gas task force. But first, an Aberdeenshire firm this week announced it was taking on 50 extra staff after securing a £45 million deal. West Hill headquartered drove up, won the five-year contract with global oil and gas subsea construction specialists Iona. Chemicals giant INEOS has asked the Scottish and UK governments for grants and loan guarantees of £150 million to build a new gas terminal. The firm says its petrochemical site in Grangemouth is unsustainable and will close by 2017 without new investments. It put forward a survival plan, saying it was willing to invest £300 million to help build a new gas terminal to bring ethane from the US. An integrated drilling and environmental solutions firm won its first offshore contract in the central North Sea. TWMA's deal with Total will deliver offshore waste management services in the development of the Martin Linge field and will last 7 years. Given the go-ahead by Norwegian authorities, it could see the introduction of other offshore processing to the Norwegian continental shelf. Industry bosses this week highlighted the need for the oil and gas sector to prepare for forthcoming decommissioning projects. Oil and Gas UK published its Insight into Decommissioning Market documents, which it hopes will increase the efficiency of related processes. Its launch came at the 2013 Offshore Decommissioning Conference in St Andrews. The study indicates a total of £10.4 billion is to be spent on the decommissioning of assets in the UK continental shelf between this year and 2022. The organisation's operations director, Una Werngren, spoke to me from the conference.
The Decommissioning Insight is an annual survey that Oil and Gas UK carries out on behalf of the industry. We've focused on 27 major operators in the North Sea who provided information to us about what decommissioning will look like over the next decade. And it's telling us that £10.4 billion will be spent in the UKCS on this activity over the next 10 years, with a total forecast close to about £35 billion over the life cycle of the entire North Sea.
I mean, huge sums of money. Is the industry prepared to cope with this?
The industry is prepared to cope with it. It's part of the natural life cycle of the North Sea. But what we've done here is get clarity on when the spend will occur and on what aspects of decommissioning it will occur. So, for instance, we know that in the next 10 years, there will be over 2,300 kilometres of pipeline, infrastructure from 74 fields, more than 70 subsea projects, and over 130 installations will individually be decommissioned over the next 10 years. So that gives the industry the ability to plan for that work and to ensure that we've got the right pieces of the supply chain in place to support the oil companies, and also that in itself will provide jobs for the UK.
People talk about the future of the North Sea industry and how many years we have left in the oil industry, but I suppose decommissioning is another part of that that actually is going to grow.
Well, it will through time, although it's obviously in everyone's interest that we actually produce as much hydrocarbon from the North Sea as we possibly can. So with various tax incentives that the government's put in place, it's in everyone's interest to delay decommissioning as much as possible. But we are at a stage when certain fields need to be decommissioned, and this survey gives us insight into when that will happen.
Incentives offered by the UK government, particularly for decommissioning. Is this enough? Could they do more?
Well, they've just put in place a decommissioning relief deed, which does give certainty about the future. And we're hoping that that in itself will generate new business for the UKCS.
What are the challenges going forward then for the oil and gas industry as a whole? There's a real importance being put on working together in this.
Well, there is, and one of the aspects I'm going to focus on later on today is about collaboration, because this is an area where we need new innovation, we'll require new technology, particularly around cutting and around lifting, in order to remove some of these major substructures. And the more collaboration that we have in this area, then I actually think that that would be of a benefit.
The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.
Profits from North Sea oil should be split into short and long-term saving funds if Scotland becomes independent. That's according to the Scottish Government's Fiscal Commission Working Group. It says there should be a stabilisation fund to balance income from fluctuating oil prices alongside a long-term savings fund. SNP Finance Secretary John Swinney says Scotland could get more out of oil.
We expect to be in that position by the end of this decade, and we may in fact be in that position by 2017-18. So it is clear that there is an opportunity for Scotland to invest in an oil fund, but we can only do that if we have the normal powers of independence that enable us to use the wealth of Scotland for the benefit of the people of Scotland. Scotland's economy without oil is basically on a par with the economy of the rest of the United Kingdom. So oil is an added bonus for the Scottish economy. And what we're setting out in the oil fund paper that enables Scotland to take wise decisions about stewarding of our oil resources in a way that hasn't been taken to date.
But former Labour Chancellor and Better Together Chairman Alistair Darling says you can't save money while you are borrowing at the same time.
But what is very clear is if you are so totally dependent on one source of income, and where that source of income can go up and down without notice, and you've got to make savings immediately on top of what's already been done, then Scotland would pay a very heavy price for it. For some time to come, whether it's Scotland or the UK, because of the debt levels, because of borrowing, you know, it just isn't a realistic prospect. What is very clear, though, is if we vote for independence, we will have this immediate problem. Because we can't spend all that money now on the nationalists' own admission, you'll have cuts or you'll have tax rises elsewhere.
Four helicopter crewmen were this week awarded for their role in a North Sea rescue last year. Bond crew members Graham Steen, Nick Smalley, Paul Walters and Andy Cowkes were honoured by the Shipwreck Mariner Society. It's after an operation last December when the supply vessel the Voss Sailor was struck by a wave during storms off the coast of Aberdeen. Crew member Joseph Laws died in the emergency, but others were airlifted to safety. BP this week won its compensation appeal over the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. A federal court's agreed the compensation agreement struck last year should be reviewed to help stem bogus or inflated claims. An injunction's been approved against payments made to businesses that have not suffered actual loss from the spill. It's estimated the move could save BP hundreds of millions of dollars. Labour is claiming energy prices could spiral out of control in an independent Scotland. Scottish Energy Minister Fergus Ewing this week ruled out joining Labour's conference pledge to freeze energy prices until 2017. Speaking at Holyrood, Mr Ewing warned the scheme could cost Scottish jobs and put the country's lights out.
It's been tried before, an arbitrary price freeze. It was tried in California in the year 2000. What happened, presiding officer? Blackouts and an increase in the wholesale price of 800%. Companies may put off decisions by energy companies or others to invest in new, cleaner generation capacity. The industry, SSE and Scottish Power, have said smaller companies would face insolvency and bigger companies would have to consider reductions in energies and jobs.
Aberdonians were this week urged to forget about the myths around electric cars and take them for a spin. An event took place at the AECC on Friday, offering businesses the chance to learn about the benefits of replacing petrol vehicles with so-called EVs. Organisers say they're better for the environment and are increasingly as powerful as their fuel equivalents. Chris Beaton from the Energy Saving Trust says it's worth considering them as an option.
The Energy Saving Trust in Scotland is holding a number of free breakfast events in October to showcase the benefits of electric vehicles to organisations. And really it's about showcasing and advising people in the savings and practicalities about electric vehicles and what's on offer in terms of implementing them. We recently carried out some research and we found that Scottish workers spend £270 million a year commuting by car, which Based on that, a 17-mile trip from Aberdeen to Ellen would be about £3.10 cheaper if you actually used an electric vehicle than in a petrol car. So not only is there cost savings, but there's also the environmental benefit as well. I was actually out in an electric vehicle last week, and it certainly surprised me how nippy and how sort of robust in terms of their usage they are. It's quite an amazing sensation. The car is very, very quiet, but it has the same power and really capabilities of a normal combustion engine. So you don't really notice any difference at all.
Holyrood's Energy Minister this week joined industry leaders from the north of Scotland for an oil and gas task force meeting. It was to explore how the northeast energy industry can grow its offering as a global energy hub. It was the first meeting of the group since it was formally launched in July. MSP Fergus Ewing spoke to North Sound's Richard Forbes after the event concluded.
Plainly, we're seeing arguably the biggest ever opportunities in the oil and gas industry that Scotland has seen at the current time, with investment to the tune of £13.5 billion this year, according to UK Oil and Gas, and £100 billion in the pipeline. So, obviously, Aberdeen is Europe's oil capital, and Aberdeen and Aberdeen Shire are centres of excellence and quality in the industry worldwide. But we also see the potential for the industry to use businesses in the whole of the Highlands and Islands and the north of Scotland, Monmouthshire, Aberdeenshire, and the Central Belt as well. And we think there's a need really to have a focus on this effort. So far as the north of Scotland is concerned, we've formed a task force in order to do two things. One, to let the big players in Aberdeen learn more about opportunities for subcontracting and using other businesses out with Aberdeen in the north of Scotland and Highlands and Islands. And secondly, allowing businesses within the north of Scotland and Highlands and Islands to pitch their case to the big players, and for the two to get together in a kind of concerted way to make sure that we take advantage of the enormous opportunities that exist at this current time.
Is there a big enough supply chain capacity in the north of Scotland to meet the upcoming demand with all the decommissioning work?
Well, there's decommissioning work. There's obviously new fields and extensions to existing fields. There's all sorts of work at the moment. And no, the answer is the north of Scotland, Highlands and Islands could not meet all of that work by any means. But it can make a significant contribution, as can the rest of Scotland and the UK. You know, we would like to see a business remain in Scotland and the UK rather than be lost to other parts of the globe. The answer to your question is it can't do it all, but it can do a considerable part. And I know from speaking to major players today, such as the Wood Group and BP and Chevron, that we've stimulated a bit of interest here, and also that these are companies that are outward-looking, that have in the past and have always looked to see how else and what more they can do in the supply chain. So it was a very well-attended meeting today, extremely positive attitude. We need to remain focused on offering a compelling product of quality and sharp on cost, and I think that there are tremendous opportunities for businesses really to help Aberdeen expand and for the oil and gas industry meet its needs.
You mentioned competition from foreign countries. Is that a genuine threat?
Well, of course, the oil and gas industry is truly international, and now, of course, with countries, Norway, of course, very strong, Brazil, increasingly ambitious, the USA, of course, but also Singapore and Malaysia and a whole host of other players. The competition is strong. It's an international business, and we want to compete and win on quality. And I think it's important to convey the sense that we're talking about high-quality businesses in Aberdeen and north of Aberdeen. That's going to be part of our message, to increase the share of the business that is done from the Highlands and Islands and the north of Scotland generally.
And again, infrastructure is being flagged up. Is there a need to improve the infrastructure, both broadband, this type of thing, plus roads in the north of Scotland to get everything working together?
Well, of course there is. And the Highlands and Islands broadband contract has been rolled out by HIE with BT. So
we will see considerable progress made in a couple of years on that, I'm pleased to say. These things do, of course, do take time. And in Aberdeen, we're committed to the bypass, the peripheral road, going ahead, the Western Peripheral Road going ahead. I mean, that is part of our plan now, and that will be delivered as quickly as possible. But also beyond that, there was talk today about the A96, which we believe should be dualled, and we've made a commitment to that. It is a gigantic project of the order of £3 billion. So, you know, we have to be realistic, but we want to see as rapid progress made in dualling the A96 as is possible. And as the MSP for Inverness and Mayor, and I've been arguing this case for many years, and will continue to do so. In fact, I told the audience today that with the willing support from the electorate, I'm pretty keen to see the job through and remain the MSP until both the A9 and the A96 are dualled and I can attend the ribbon-cutting ceremonies.
And this was labelled an oil and gas task force. Does that mean renewables are on the back burner now?
No, far from it. We have high ambitions in renewables and have made a great deal of progress. It's fair to say the EMR has slowed things down, but there are huge and exciting opportunities in Scotland, and we are pursuing them at the same time. It is the case, however, that we would not expect some of the biggest of the contracts to come on stream, as it were, until two or three, 4 years hence. Whereas the opportunities in the oil and gas sector are here and now, so it seems foolish, indeed negligent, not to try to take full advantage of these enormous opportunities for all the people in Scotland, and indeed, I think, to the benefit of the oil and gas industry.
And rounding off the week, Aberdeen was visited by a trade delegation from France led by the French ambassador to the UK. They met business leaders and politicians and also visited some of the French firms with bases in the northeast. Ambassador Bernard Emier tells me they were impressed by what they saw.
The objective is really, I mean, to be extremely present in that part of Scotland. We do have a lot of companies, I mean, Total, Technip, so many others. French companies do employ in this part of Scotland around, I don't know, 5,000 people. I mean, so we just want to be more committed and to explain to the public opinion, to the authorities, and we were extremely warmly received by the leader of the council, by the Lord Provost, by, of course, the Chamber of Commerce, I mean, of Aberdeen, what we are trying to do and what we want to do.
And in terms of Aberdeen, its perception in France, is it just as an energy city, or are there other aspects that people know Aberdeen for?
Well, I mean, the perception of Aberdeen is very positive. I mean, it's very well known as a major city in Scotland, in the northeastern part of Scotland. Of course, it's very well known as a hub for energy, I mean, in all sectors, but it's known as well because your universities are extremely prestigious. And I guess that we do have, I mean, a lot of French students here. You do have around 3,000, 4,000 French citizens in Aberdeen or in the region. And at the same time, you do have very strong links with many French cities, including Clermont-Ferrand in the center of France, with a very active and successful twinning. So Aberdeen does have a very positive image in France.
Don't forget, for all the latest news in the energy sector, tune into our special Energy Zone bulletins each weekday morning on North Sound during breakfast. That's it for this week. This has been the North Sound Energy Week podcast. I'm Finlay Duncan.
The North Sound Energy Week with Active Payroll. Become part of an award-winning team. Go to activepayroll.com/careers for your next move.